Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 238, recorded December 8th, 2011, with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, all about the G's. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring available voice-activated Sync. Sync gives you versatile access to music, podcasts, and more from just about any device. Check it out on the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by Newegg, the Newegg gadget trade-in site powered by Gazelle. Trade in your used gadgets today at Newegg.com/trade and receive a Newegg gift card. That's Newegg.com/trade. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continual, and unlimited backup of your computer files for only $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code Windows and get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for Windows Weekly. Leo Laporte is on assignment, and in all fairness, he put himself on assignment. He's covering La Web with Sarah Lane and Eileen Rivera, and they've got all their stuff going on. You can check it out live at like really early morning, around 3 a.m. Pacific, or you can check out TWiT specials. I'm Aya Zachter filling in, but thankfully, I'm not alone covering Windows Weekly. We're here with the stars of the show, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Paul, how's it going?
You're so alone, so very alone.
Well, yes, but I'm also whether I'm lonely has nothing to do with this program, Paul.
I'm sorry.
You are.
I am well. I apologize. I don't know why the dark tone.
Why so dark? It always feels like I'm introducing boxers in the beginning of the show. It's like in this corner,
right,
hailing from his home office.
Let me let some sun in.
He's gonna let some sun. He's gonna get some rays, some vitamin D. Help. It's gonna help him out. You know.
Yeah.
Hailing from Wind Super
Sight. Help with the jaundice,
Paul. We're off to a rip-roaring start. Let's switch over to the other corner. In this corner, from allaboutmicrosoft.com at CDNet, is Mary Jo Foley. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Just fine. Okay. So we've gotten over that hurdle when everybody's good. I'm lonely by myself here. But anyway, when they offered me the opportunity to guest host Windows Weekly, I jumped on that. I tackled the opportunity, so I'm psyched. I love this show. So let's talk about Windows 8 beta. It's actually coming out in February. It's been confirmed from Microsoft. And so that means they're not going to be showing off Windows 8 powered tablets or actually, they may still show it off at CES. But Windows 8 will be available for everybody in a beta in February. Paul, you got any details on this?
Well, I don't know details, but certainly I expect them to show off the Windows 8 beta or something very close to it. You know, one of the little things that's hidden in the fine print there for the developers around the Windows Store is that they'll actually get or people who are approved into this early look program will get the ability to get a more recent build of Windows 8. So there'll be some churn occurring and something new to show. So even though we're not going to get it at CES in January, I fully expect them to show it off and show off new tablets and, you know, all kinds of other stuff. So It's absolutely bad news, although somewhat expected, but I don't think that means we have to wait until February for more information. I think January is still going to be a big deal.
Are there any features you think that will be added in the beta that aren't available right now in the developer preview?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the developer preview is not feature complete, so we can speculate about what could be included. We know a few things that are missing, like Media Center and so forth, but yeah, this hopefully will be that. I can't imagine it not being that feature complete, or at least very close to feature complete, look at what they intend to ship later in the year.
Is it going to have that new file system? What is it? It's like RFS or something like that. REFS.
You should ask Mary Jo about that. She's been following that particular story closely. I know.
Yeah, the thing that was codenamed Protagon. It's called REFS, which we don't really know if that stands for relational or reliability, whatever that RE is supposed to be. I thought it would be in the beta, but I've seen a report. It doesn't have name sources, but Tom Warren saying it'll only be in the server version of Windows 8. I'm a little bit skeptical of that, though, because people who hacked the builds before the developer preview, they saw it in the client build. They saw this new file system. So we don't really know. Is it going to be in the beta or not? we'll find out, I guess.
So this isn't officially WinFS reborn. It's just another version, another file system. So WinFS is still coming with Longhorn, if it ever.
That's right.
I'm still waiting.
It'll
happen. Very much coming with Longhorn.
So IDC says
2022
in Windows 10. IDC is saying that Windows 8 is going to be largely irrelevant on PCs. Why would anybody say that? Like, I mean, isn't Windows 8 like going to be on PCs? Why would it be irrelevant on an actual device?
Well, having used Windows 8 on an actual PC for the past month or so, I can tell you that that's probably true unless something changes, because there's really no way to take advantage of this kind of cross application environment in a way that's effective, by which I mean the ability to run some Metro apps, some traditional Windows apps side by side. It's just not a great experience. So unless something changes, I don't see Windows 8 as a huge upgrade for existing users on today's hardware, because it doesn't really offer a huge improvement yet. I mean, you know, again, we'll have to wait and see if anything changes over Windows 7. I mean, in my day-to-day use with the Windows 8 developer preview, try it as hard as I can, I'm pretty much just using it as if it were Windows 7. So there are some niceties in there. The new task manager is pretty cool. The file copy stuff is dramatically improved. You know, they've changed Explorer a little bit in ways that I actually kind of like. But those are not major new features. Those are just, minor tweaks. So the big thing that's going to change, of course, is this introduction of the new runtime and the Metro style apps, and then how those things kind of interact with each other. I think that Windows 8 is going to be a big deal for new types of PCs that have touchscreens, especially tablets and some new other portable computers, and probably for touchscreen big computers, you know, desktop type machines as well. But, you know, this is a big gray area right now where it's really kind of hard to say, you know, how successful this thing's going to be for upgraders, you know. And then just one final point on that, I would just say that, you know, with the exception of Windows 7, which actually was an exception to this rule, upgrades were never really that big a part of the Windows, you know, sales pitch each year. You know, it was a very small percentage. That's probably going to be the case with Windows 8, because I think people who have, you know, a regular boxy desktop computer are going to look at this thing and think, well, this doesn't really give me much.
You think you're saying upgraders won't be like looking at their PCs and go, wow, I don't like these rounded corners. I want the squared off edges of Metro. That's not going to get them in droves?
No, but the hope here is, see, for Windows 8 to be really successful, what you want is for people to buy new hardware. You know, that's what the whole ecosystem wants. They want people to go out and buy a new computer. So if Windows 8 is successful, it's going to be because people look at that and say, wow, that is really cool, but obviously I need a touchscreen to take most advantage of that. I'm going to go buy new hardware. And that's not what IDC is talking about. They're talking about existing PCs. And I agree with them. I think it is going to be, unless something changes, based on what we know now, probably will be largely irrelevant to existing PCs.
The other thing they were figuring into this is, you know, for enterprise users, especially, I think it's going to be a tougher sell, because a lot of them are only just now going to Windows 7.
Right.
So if you're only in the midst now of rolling out, you know, tens of thousands of PCs to Windows 7, are you next year going to be, you know, chomping at the bit to go to Windows 8? Probably not, right?
No, not at all. But, you know, several months ago, I talked to the Windows Intune people, but they're, you know, Windows client team. And they were saying that from their perspective, from a management perspective, that Windows 8 and Windows 7 would be the same thing. And I think that's what you're seeing here, is that for businesses for the foreseeable future, Windows 8 will be deployed just because it's the next thing, but it will be configured to be just like Windows 7. And that won't be a training hit there or any cost associated with getting people to understand this new system, so that, you know, Windows 8 and Windows 7 could sit side by side in some environment and people probably wouldn't notice the difference because they're going to be able to configure it to be like Windows 7. So Windows 7 is not going to be, Windows 8 is not going to be a big deal for businesses, but some of them will just, you know, they're not really buying a version of Windows. They're buying a license for Windows and they can choose which one to install. And I think Windows 8 certainly is not a cause for for Microsoft's business customers to stop deploying Windows 7 and start thinking about the future. I think from their perspective, these two things are the same thing.
There's a video.
I was going to bring up one other thing that in that IDC prediction is, two things. They love Windows Server 8. they're like predicting that's going to be a runaway success, which is interesting. And then the other point is another big reason they're saying it could be irrelevant is they're worried about Microsoft convincing developers to go Metro. And, you know, you don't, as we know from Build, you don't have to go Metro. You could still go the traditional desktop app route where you're doing non-Metro interface kind of app that's not touch-centric. But the question is, if you're doing a new app, why would you do that? So, you know, IDC said, we haven't seen any evidence yet of Microsoft being able to really win over developers to the new Metro paradigm. But I think it's still a little early to say that's not going to happen, because I think developers are still really trying to figure out, you know, what is WinRT and how do I use XAML? What's the future of Silverlight going to be for the platform? So, you know, I think it's a little bit early to say, oh, developers aren't flocking to the platform. But I think by the time the beta comes out, they better have a pretty strong body of developers that they can hold up and say, here's, you know, this one, and this one going Metro.
Wasn't one of the hooks of Metro that those apps would be easily, I guess, portable to Windows Phone devices as well? I mean, I thought that was one of the reasons why Microsoft was pushing the Metro interface or the Metro apps so much harder.
They've never actually promised that. So, you know, again, I think there's a supposition that Windows Phone is going to go the Windows route and that it will essentially be a version of Windows, in which case that would happen. And then actually at that point, there are interesting other considerations around Windows Phone, because, you know, Windows PCs are so highly manageable. If Windows Phone was based on Windows, then it too could be managed in environments, in corporate environments, much like a Windows PC is, which would be very desirable, I think, to people. But right now, they haven't come out and said that. So, you know, they just released a new version of Windows Phone that's based on the current code base that has nothing to do with Windows, really. And obviously, even if that is the intention, they're not talking up that future because they want people to buy Windows Phone now.
So there's a video floating around what looks to be the return of what people are calling it, the return of squirting. If you remember the ability to share songs.
God, I miss squirting.
Well, this is the future concept, beaming across devices. I'm going to try to get the video playing. It's, you know, a guy walking around his nice futuristic office, and he's going to take his Windows Phone and send his images right to a television. But they use smartly the word beam, which I think Android's actually using as well, which is not...
Yeah, but you know, the other thing that's occurring in that video is it actually said play to, which is an existing Microsoft capability. It's kind of similar to the AirPlay stuff. You know, they built it into Windows Media Player and Windows 7. So, you know, I don't know. You know, I guess the genesis of this technology is hard to ascertain from this video, but I'm not sure that when you look at this, we see anything that hasn't already, well, you know, sort of happened in the past. Like this segment right here where they're switching information between a slate and a phone or a smartphone or whatever. You know, that's, we used to do that with IR, you know, with IR, right?
Yeah, and that's just networking. It's like, okay, you have an ad hoc network between these two devices.
Yeah, so I mean, I think like... it's fanciful to say, oh, this Zoom feature is coming back, you know. I'm not sure it's exactly the same thing.
No, and when I saw it, I was thinking Microsoft Research has shown off some stuff that looks like this, you know, where you can have an image on one surface and then they display it on another surface. So, I mean, I'm also skeptical that it's the same technology that was in Zoom. I think it's, you know, it's a concept, but those concept videos, that's what they are. They're concepts. They're just kind of meant to be high level possibility, futuristic kind of stuff. Not like here's where we're going with the next version of our product.
Here is a feature of Windows Phone 8.
Right.
It seems like a variant of, like, there's Wi-Fi Direct that does this DLNA kind of concept. AirPlay's got the same thing. The Play 2, like you said. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways to get your content to another thing. Even like if you want to use something as silly as Intel's WiDi, you could just send your own display over. The networking concept. Yeah, networking has been around. It's funny how it's difficult to actually move files around at times. If you're like, hey, you have a device and I have a device, I'd like to share this with you. You have to go through some complicated means. It'd be nice if it worked that way.
I always call out Minority Report because, by and large, I feel like it's a pretty decent prediction of the future. You know, they have these big touch screens and people always talk about how, you know, there's some elements of the Surface stuff in there and there's some elements of Kinect in there and everything. But there's this weird moment in that movie where they want to transfer data from one screen to the other, and they actually have to plug in what amounts to a Tom Cruise version of a USB flash drive. It, you know, it's like a glass, you know, cylinder or rectangle or something, but they literally take something physical, put it into his screen, copy the information to it, unplug it, and then they actually sneaker net it across the office. And here, you know, here they are in 2100 or whatever year this is supposed to take place in, and they're still, you know, they still aren't. It was that one moment that, if you know anything about, you know, computers or technology, it kind of takes you out of the moment because you're looking at all this other awesome stuff which seemed very realistic, and then you realize in this one way they totally blew it.
I don't know if they blew it. I mean, it's still hard to do it now. I used to watch 24, and they'd be like, hey, put that on my screen. I'm like, how? How are they doing that? Because it's very difficult to, like, duplicate stuff unless you're doing, like, a VNC kind of feel. I mean, I remember just doing a VNC kind of situation. You want to copy and move a file. You better have the right piece of software to do that. It's just you'd think this would be taken care of already. It's 2011, the end of 2011, and we still don't have this easily done. So if Microsoft's working on it, if it actually is coming, and there's an easy way to do networking, assuming it's secure, you always got to worry about security there. You don't want people just walking by, you know, stealing beams. This could be a real issue. Microsoft also had a nice press conference about the Windows Store, a two-hour conference at San Francisco, showing off how this store is going to work. And the big hook, at least when I saw this, I thought this differentiated it right away, that it starts off with a 70-30 split. I mean, Apple does the same thing. I think Google does it. Until an application hits $25,000 in revenue, this isn't their profit, then it goes to an 80-20 split, where the developer gets to keep a lot, well, 10% more money, which I think is a pretty good deal. What did you guys make, or what did you take out of the presentation?
Actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a question. I'm curious that you thought that was a big differentiator. Not because I don't think it is. I'm just curious how this was viewed out in the world. You know, do you really think that is a big differentiator? That developers...
Here's why. Because, you know, the first thing people say when they come to these app stores, right? They're like, oh, Apple gets paid a lot more, or Apple developers get paid more than Google developers because their applications are out there. They're easier to see. But it seems to me that if you are going to work very hard on an application and you are willing to go, look, it's going to be a real hit. I'm going to put a lot of effort into this and it's going to do well. You're likely to go, you know what? I can make more money in the long term. Because let's say, this is going to sound like a dumb example, but Angry Birds, right? This one is like the app store demarcator. If your app store doesn't have this, you're not an app store. So if you're expecting, or if you really think you have a brilliant idea, you might be willing to work a little harder on the Metro version of it instead of worrying about the Apple version of it or the Mac version of it or whatever other store there is out there. So I thought it was a nice hook, but it was the biggest differentiator between this and every other app store.
It's tough to come up with an app store in 2012, right? Because you're by nature me-tooing, you know, these other things that are very successful. Even though, you know, Microsoft, of course, has had online stores and app stores for many, many years. It's just that nobody knows that they did. So, you know, but I mean, unfortunately, it just looks like it, it looks like that's what it is. And in many ways, I guess that is what it is.
You know, though, I really thought Microsoft was going to get even more aggressive than they did on the pricing. I mean, I think that was good. They gave people who sell a whole lot of apps a hook. But because they're coming in late, I think they really should have gone tough and said, okay, you know what? We're going to take a 20% cut instead of a 30 on all apps.
Yeah, and I was thinking the same thing.
Let's step up to the plate. You know, Windows 8 update, Anora Amobi said this too. He was like, why are they being so cheap? They need to come from behind here. And let's get serious and let's make it really worth the while of the developer to try Metro.
I think I was most impressed that they're doing an app contest. I think they're calling their first apps contest. And the prizes are incredibly lame. It's like a 2-year subscription to fee instead of get into the app store. There's a little fee you have to pay per year. You're free for 2 years, and like you get a reserved name. It's like Google when they did it for Android, they gave away like $500,000.
Right, but the real prize here is you're going to be in an app store first, and you're going to have access to hundreds of millions of people like immediately, and that's pretty cool. You know, maybe not. I guess during the beta, it won't be hundreds of millions, but I think there's some cachet to this too. So I hear what you're saying about the prizes, but I think the real benefit here is just getting into this thing.
So they also get a year free of Windows Azure access. So great stuff.
Fantastic.
But you know what? I think a lot of people are going to enter that contest though to get an early preview of Windows 8. I mean, they're going to give, they're going to get the code. If you make it to the second level of that competition, you're going to get the code about probably a month or so ahead of everybody else. And for some people, that's enough of an incentive to do this.
Actually, write an app.
Write an app. Write an app and win and get the code.
Sure. And you can win. You get that developer preview tablet as well. It's another one of the features. So if you're really interested in getting that tablet and you missed out, you can develop an application right now. You know, I was testing out an Ultrabook. And one of the weird things was I was figuring, okay, what can I do with this thing? They took out the optical drives on these devices at this point to be light and thin. And I was thinking, I was digging back in my head, I'm like, okay, what applications do I want? I'm kind of curious if you guys think, do you think an app store at this point is kind of integral for these things that don't have optical drives? I mean, it's a weird idea for me. Like, I used to go into a store, an actual physical store, and I used to buy software with CDs and
in a box.
In a box, no less. For some reason, a giant box, and the disc
a box was full of air.
I think
that I had made the case maybe a year or two ago about, you know, mobile platforms that, you know, any mobile platform you're going to consider buying into, you know, an app store is like the baseline. That has to be part of it, you know. And I think for mainstream computing environments now as well, you know, same thing. Yeah, you have to have this. This is just a requirement of, you know, for playing the game these days. So definitely. Yeah,
look at that.
If they came out with something they said was an iPad competitor with no app store, I think they'd just be laughed out. Basically,
it would be like shipping a tablet with no email app. It's crazy.
It is. It's crazy.
That was a cheap shot at the playbook. You could access email through their browser. I don't know. I still don't understand how they managed to do that. But the funny thing is, when I'm trying to review this laptop, I had to remember something. Like, what do people do outside of go online? Because for most people, like when I saw that report about Windows 8 being irrelevant, I was thinking, as long as there's a browser, most people are happy. They're not using like Audacity. They're not using Windows Live Movie Maker necessarily. That was another thing. I was like, how do you even get content on this thing? I guess via USB if you have a camera. You beam it. Ah, there we go.
Nice.
That's
how it all comes full circle.
That makes so much
sense. It's called squirting, Alex.
Squirting. Yes, you can squirt. Don't forget to squirt your video to your Ultrabook that's powered by Windows 8 with its Metro app interface.
Long for the day where I have to explain this action to my parents and the quizzical look I'm going to get.
Actually, that's a perfect time to thank a sponsor, shall we? Let's thank Ford. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring Available Sync. Sync's entertainment features enable you to access music and podcasts from most devices, including iPods, mobile phones, tablets, or flash drives. And with Sync with My Ford Touch, you can play videos or display photos from your digital cameras or portable game device when your vehicle's in park. It's about safety there. It's all made possible through a versatile media hub, which supports a convenient variety of devices for your music and entertainment, such as wired connections from just about any device, USB ports, SD card slots, RCA jacks, whatever, or wireless via Bluetooth. If you have a Bluetooth device, which you probably do, just connect your devices and play. Once your device is connected, you can use Sync's voice activation feature to play what you want. This is really cool. Just a few examples. You can say, like, play genre, hip-hop. You can say, like, play artist, LL Cool J. Or play track, Mama Said Knock You Out. It would work. That's how good this is. Also available is Sync with My Ford Touch HD Radio. This features iTunes tagging, which lets you tag a song you like on the radio. Then you can transfer that to your iPod and purchase the song directly from iTunes at a later time. Sync's versatile entertainment features are available in the 2012 Ford Focus. You can learn more about this and other technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. That's Ford.com/technology, and we thank Ford for their support of Windows Weekly. On to offline software. This is a weird concept. I mean, we're always talking about app stores and things, but Windows Defender offline to help you stop rootkits and things. Like, what an
idea. You need something to do on the plane when you can't get online, and one of those things would be to scan for malware.
Yes, that's so important. That really is kind of important. You're like, hey, do you have a couple hours to kill?
Why not?
So what's the story behind this offline thing? I mean, this is, I believe you can actually put it on a CD.
You can. You can put it on a DVD. You can put it on a USB flash drive, which is what I did. And, you know, I'm not entirely sure what this is replacing and everything, but it appears to be a new version of what they used to call that offline security scanner or something similar to that. The UI is identical to that of Windows Defender or Microsoft Security Essentials. It runs, you know, full screen when you boot up the computer to this interface. But the interesting thing about it to me is when you run it, you can see in the UI that this is, in fact, the version of Windows Defender that comes with Windows 8, which means that it's not just anti-spyware, but it's also antivirus. And in previous, you know, for all current versions of Windows, the Windows Defender tool only does spyware, or what Microsoft sometimes called malware scanning. And this one actually has the definitions for both. So I think that explains why it's still in beta, because I think it's going to coincide with the release of Windows 8. And I'm just guessing, but I believe it's going to replace their previous offline security scanner. So the reason this is important is that some malware types are actually very hard to remove, or even sometimes impossible when Windows is running, especially things like rootkits. And so if you can get this thing to hit the hard drive outside of Windows, which is what you're doing when you boot from that other device, then you have a better chance of getting stuff like that off of your system. So it's kind of an emergency tool when all else fails, I guess.
So how would you keep this updated? I mean, are you going to get an update and then you have to either reburn a CD or DVD or just update your flash drive? I mean, how does that work with, I guess, definitions?
Yeah, you can, right. So there's actually a way to update definitions from the application itself while it's running. I did not have the device I tested it on was Wi-Fi, not Ethernet, and it did not connect to the internet. So I'm guessing that whatever basic drivers it ships with, it's sort of a WinPE style boot deal, don't work over Wi-Fi. So that's something I'm, or at least on my, with my chipset or whatever. So
did you mention,
I'll need to look at that.
Did you mention it was based on Windows 8?
Yeah, it appears to be.
That seems a little, it's kind of neat.
Yeah, where does it say that somewhere in it, Paul?
No, but if you look at Windows Defender as it exists in Windows 7, it only does anti-spyware. And if you look at Windows Defender in Windows 8, let me just bring it up so I can tell you how it, I just recognized it as being the same. Let me see. In Windows 8, lots of switch in there, it has definitions for viruses and spyware that are separate. And that's what this one has. If you run it in Windows 7, it only has spyware.
So it's like MSC plus the Windows Defender technology together.
Yeah. Right. So in Windows 8, this will be built in. You won't have to get Microsoft Security Essentials anymore. Those capabilities are built into Windows Defender now. And so it appears that this offline scanner is, in fact, the Windows 8 version of Windows Defender. But I believe you can run it across. You can run it against, I think it's XP, Vista, and 7, as well as 8, presumably. And that means you would be able to remove viruses or other malware from a computer that was running an older version of Windows using the very latest tools that Microsoft has, which is itself pretty interesting.
Yep. Not to backtrack too much.
Yeah, I asked, when is it coming? You know, the beta's out. When is it coming? And is this, what is the Defender in Windows 8, and I was told no comment on both.
I was just thinking, I guess, because I'm guessing they had absolutely no comment at all. And that's
absolutely
just
no
further
comment.
Than
yeah.
Not to backtrack too much, but there was an announcement about the Windows App Store, the Windows Store. It will not be available for anything below Windows 8. What do you guys think about the drawing the line in the sand when it comes to that kind of thing?
Well, they have to, because it's really about Metro apps, right? You know, for existing mainstream developers, they're going to allow them to put links in there to their existing Windows desktop apps, you know, but they're not going to open that up to everybody. You know, there could be some guy who wrote a little utility that runs in Windows. He's not going to get into the Windows App Store. This thing's curated, right? But when Adobe shows up, they have all these apps that run under the desktop. Of course they're going to get in. But Microsoft is not going to host desktop apps. They're only going to host Metro apps. So really this thing is about Metro apps. And I think the legacy desktop stuff is just there as a placeholder for those tier one application vendors that, you know, may have some mix of new and old style apps for some time to come.
So over the weekend,
Then they're also going to, they're also going to have something for the business users who want to have private marketplace through the store. So say you're an IT manager and you develop something like a spreadsheet just for your own employees, you're going to have the option, if that's a Metro app that you wrote, to distribute it privately through the store just for your own employees too. So that's actually pretty good.
And if I'm understanding this correctly, that is also the only way that a Windows 8 user will be able to install a Metro style app on Windows 8, right? That these things otherwise have to be curated through the Microsoft store.
Yeah, that's what I picked up too.
Yeah, there's one way around it. There, if you develop something, I think using PowerShell, like, and it's not a Metro app, you're going to be able to still somehow like circumvent the store, but have private app distribution with Windows 8.
Yeah. Well, you can, but that's the only way. Developer unlock phones today. Windows Phone, you know, there's the ability to. You can create your own app and join the developer program and get apps on there that way, or you can use a tool like the Chevron WP7 Labs developer unlock the phone and install apps outside of the app store. So, I mean, there are probably going to be ways around that for Windows 8 as well. But generally speaking, you know, the goal here is to prevent people from downloading malicious software, right? So they want everything to go through a certification process.
So if you get all your apps through the App Store or the Windows Store, I keep calling it the wrong thing. You don't even have to run Windows Defender then, because everything is safe until.
That's right. In fact, I turn it off for that very reason.
It keeps my machine running light and free.
Right, exactly.
It's a freeing experience. Over the weekend, by the way, Microsoft, they just lifted all kinds of embargoes. The Xbox 360 update, people had blog posts about it. It was fantastic. It's going to come out on Tuesday, they said. And then there was some kind of slight delay. Major Nelson on Twitter talked about the slight delay. I think the update showed up somewhere on Tuesday, just very late, and it was rolling out slowly. And as Alex put it on his TwitPic, he says, "My God, it's full of tiles. Can we get my screen here?" He's got a Windows Phone device. He's got Windows 8, and on the top there is the new dashboard. Yeah. Actually,
Is that a live shot?
What's that?
Is that a live shot?
This is just one of
his. Just the picture. Because one of the problems I have with this UI is that it's really only skin deep. You know, if you go into settings, for example, you're confronted with the old UI under there, and I think that says a lot to me about the whether this thing is a major deal or not. And also, I'd point out, you know, when they came out with the previous UI for the Xbox 360, they gave it a name. Remember? It was the new Xbox experience.
Right, and this one's just called the. Is it called
it's just
the Metro?
It's just dashboard update. You know, it's just a. You know, and there have been several dashboard updates, so I find that to be kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, it's got tiles everywhere. The update also includes updates to Kinect, so it's supposed to have better voice control, more natural language support, and it's supposed to be better with motion control. Although I still think it's awkward to swipe like this. You know,
I do too. It's terrible. So here's what I do. It's very interesting. You know, in testing this, I find myself gesticulating wildly in front of my Xbox, trying to get it to recognize what I'm doing, which makes me really mad. And then you can speak to it, and of course, it doesn't seem to recognize what you're saying. So you start yelling at it, and then when you combine both of those things, you know, you look like a mad person. And you can tell something's wrong when your kids kind of like curiously look around the corner to make sure that dad's okay, and it's like, it's okay. I'm just testing the Kinect. You know, and it's just, I find that stuff to be, you know, I don't know.
Now, what do you guys have any insights as to what caused the delay? I mean, was it just some like lazy guy who didn't turn the server on, like, oops, I forgot to do the update? Or was it something deeper? I mean, there could have been like, was there code issues? Do you guys have any insight to why there was a bit of a delay? Especially when Microsoft said on the weekend, it's coming. And then like on Tuesday,
they said a month ago it was coming. I mean, I think we'll never find out why. Maybe it's not important, but it was really only, it was delayed and ultimately about 10 hours or something. So, you know,
they called it a deployment delay, right? So that just could be pretty much anything. And, you know, I saw some people speculating they're delaying it so that they can have it come out at the exact time they're making the Windows Store announcement. They're not that coordinated.
No, that's ridiculous. Yeah. No, that's ridiculous. In fact, it's more possible that there was a guy trying to use the Kinect to launch the software update, and it couldn't recognize his hand gesture.
He's like, Kinect, launch update.
You know,
Kinect, hours later, he's launch, like,
please,
update.
Please.
Update to world, now.
Xbox, deploy.
I don't know if that's a command, but Paul, did you been testing the update?
I kind of like it. I mean, it's not jarringly different from what came before. It's also not a direct analog to what's on Windows 8. You know, for example, on Windows 8, you kind of seamlessly go across these screens. On this one, very much every one of these screens, which they call hubs, which is the same name they use in Windows Phone, are one screen full of information. There's never a point at which it bleeds over to the next. Of course, now you're showing the screen where it does. I mean, in the actual UI itself, I mean. where the UI itself bleeds over to the side. So these things are big screenfuls of stuff. Like, you can see how this stuff on the edge?
Yep.
That's actually a different screen. So it goes to music. And then if you go over again, it goes to apps. It doesn't, you know, it's not, there's not more music over there. It's just apps. You know, it's a different,
like,
it's a different
Windows phone is. It's like you go left to right. You're still scrolling through one particular, like, if it's your people.
There's a couple of things. And, you know, there's a lot of places in the Xbox where you can make settings changes. And they've made that a little bit better. Some of the stuff is bizarre, though. You know, if you want to change the theme, that's actually in your profile, which is not under settings. It's under the social tab. You know, there's weird stuff like that where stuff is still in weird places. And then I'd also point out that there are some really off-putting UIs in there that date back literally to the first launch of the Xbox. Like the media player that's in there for music and video is basically exactly the same as it was in 2005. And it's amazing to me that they haven't updated this stuff.
I'm just thinking about the original Xbox media player, all the green and black everywhere.
I don't mean the original. I mean the original Xbox.
Yeah, the Xbox. Like, I haven't fired up my Xbox in about, I don't know, 8 months.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping I'm still eligible for the recall that was made months and months ago. Because I have such an old version of it. I'm kind of curious to see what this is going to be like. I just set up my house.
This thing, I would say, is the software equivalent of what they did with that last Xbox 360 hardware rev, where they finally made something that makes sense in the living room. You know, the previous version of the console, the original version, was too loud. It was white, you know, for some reason. So this one looks more like stereo componentry. It's quieter. It looks more at home in the living room. And now with this software, this is something that I think looks pretty nice up on a big HD TV. It's a nice interface. It remains to be seen whether, you know, the gesture stuff and the speaking to the screen really makes a lot of sense. I think there's going to be some confusion where, you know, the Bing search capabilities that are built in are literally only for the built-in apps on the Xbox. This isn't search the internet from your TV. This is search your Xbox from the TV, or search Xbox Live, I guess would be the way to look at it.
The weird thing is the commands. You have to go Xbox, Bing, and then show title. It's like, wait, why do I have to do
that? And then you get aggravated because sometimes it doesn't seem to hear you. So you say Xbox, Bing, Xbox, Bing, Xbox, you know, and then after a while it gets, you know, are you there? Hello? Anybody? Is this working for anybody? You know, I don't know. So I need to test that stuff some more. I'm not thrilled.
Maybe it's a way to get you to say Bing as a verb.
This is like, yes, right. Exactly. Say Bing three times and the Bing genie will appear.
it'll be like Clippy, but not. It'll just show up at the bottom there.
Right,
you rang, it would say. Now, Microsoft also had the Xbox Live companion app for Windows Phone, and surprisingly, the My Xbox Live app for iOS, which
these are two completely different things.
Now, I was curious about the Windows Phone version. Is there a way to automatically maybe hold down a button so you can access the voice control instead of having to say Xbox?
No, that's a good question.
Or Bing? Like, could you make it your remote control so you don't have to
It does work as a remote control. You know, anyone who's been using Apple products a lot for the past several years will immediately recognize what this app really is, which is basically just Microsoft's version of that, you know, remote app that they had for Apple TV. And, you know, there's an early adopter thing where you look at the screen and you're like, look, I can browse content that might be in the store on the Xbox on my phone. And that's actually kind of interesting. And then there are hokey interfaces on here where there's a virtual remote on the screen that isn't so successful, you know. Overall, I have to say, I don't find this app to be particularly useful.
Does it offer demo videos as to connect gestures? Does it give you help?
No, it doesn't.
But I'm still curious about that. Can you cue the voice control from the application? Yeah. That seems like that would be a no-brainer.
Well, let me look. I don't believe so. I'm just seeing what it has. I mean, it has this, you know, the remote thing works. So it has like the, you know, you can navigate around the interface. You could go to the Bing page, the Bing hub, I guess I call it. And then you could speak if you have Kinect. If you don't have Kinect, what you can do is you can go down and select the search box. And it's weird because at this point, you don't get a virtual keyboard on the phone, which would make typing into this thing excellent.
What?
Instead, you have to use the on-screen keyboard, which, by the way, is not a keyboard. It is literally one long row of letters, and actually just letters, right across the top of the screen. you know, in a single row. There's not, it's not a keyboard that you kind of go up and down, and it's a string, like left to right. So that makes it really ponderous to type searches in. So I just, but from the phone, look at this. You can do it from the phone, but it doesn't go to the screen, right? So you can search Bing from the companion app. And so let me just type in something like Halo. And the search results, of course, they don't appear on the screen. They appear on the phone. So then it gives you a list of Halo games, of course. And if you were to select one, like, let's see. I'm trying to see the point at which something actually occurs on the screen. It never does. So you can play it on the console. Let's see what happens if it does that. So it actually goes to, I do have this game, but it's not in the drive. So it's asking me if I want to purchase it online for $39.99. There you go. Another successful Bing search.
It's a companion. That's what they say.
It is a companion. Yeah. So it's, you know, in the same way that Siri is this type of thing where you can talk to your phone to a point, but then at some point, of course, you have to look at information on the screen, agree to it, accept it, or move from there. You know, this kind of thing, the interaction between what's happening on the TV and on the screen that you're holding in your hand is not always as seamless as you might want. So I don't know. It's as far as I'm concerned, this is not necessarily a great way to browse the non-gaming content that's on your console or on the service, right? Like, you know, if you want to use Zune Marketplace or Netflix or any of the other apps. You know, Microsoft sells a remote, which I just got actually, which is really small and actually kind of cheap, and by which I mean inexpensive. And this works great. Like, this thing to me makes more sense. I believe it only costs $15. Makes a lot more sense than using a phone as a remote.
But Paul, you're going to look ridiculous pointing a device at a device.
I know, it's crazy. Well, it's certainly better than using a hand controller.
Or flicking through things. I've got the My Xbox Live loaded on an iPod Touch.
Great. Now, that app is actually decent.
Yeah, it's a nice piece of, like, pardon
the... If you haven't done it, you should load that on an iPad.
Yeah, that...
The iPad version is particularly good.
Yeah, you can actually scroll through things. Like, oh, it's kind of like that Windows... the little Windows Phone demo they made available as an HTML5 demo.
Because it does look like Windows Phone. But actually,
this is nice.
What that thing is literally everything that's in the Games Hub on Windows Phone, minus, of course, the Windows Phone game collection, right, which is one of the main reasons you'd go in there. But it's all the stuff around your Xbox Live account, the account management. You know, you can modify your avatar. You can modify your profile. You can look at your achievements. You can compare the games you played to games that your friends have played and so forth. All that stuff, it's basically the same thing that's available on Windows Phone, but now it's available on iOS devices as well.
But will this get people to move from iOS? Or they just Microsoft made a pretty cool app.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the point. I think it's more along the lines of there's probably a lot of crossover between people who have devices and people who have the Xbox 360. And that this is just the type of thing they would like to be able to do when they're out in the world. You know, maybe I can update my profile. I can send out a beacon. Actually, and that's a good point. You know, one of the new features in the dashboard update that just came out is this notion of beacons. And beacons are something that you can send from the Xbox console, of course, and from that iOS app, but not from the Windows Phone. You know, because that thing is built into Windows Phone, it hasn't been updated and might not be until the next version of Windows Phone, if history is any guide. So here we have an iOS app that actually in that one way exceeds what's possible.
So on the left side, we have the Windows Phone version. This is the Windows Xbox Live companion on the left.
Yeah, so
right.
See that collection pane that you're looking at? That's the one bit that is not present on the iOS app because those are the Windows Phone apps.
Yeah, but there's that inconsistency you're talking about where you're scrolling left to right, still games. You know, on the Windows Phone device, but when it's on the screen, on the dashboard, you go from one section to the other.
Yeah, it's different experiences, yeah.
Well, that's not the companion app. That's just the Xbox Hub.
Well, it's just the Xbox Hub. Let's go to the companion.
Well, I don't have it set up. So
you don't have it set up?
No.
Well, I can't do anything because there's no Xbox there. It literally has to work with an Xbox.
We don't have an Xbox in here, do we? Set up. We do have an Xbox somewhere. Why do we have it set up?
Honestly, it's almost not worth the effort.
That's a glowing endorsement.
Which explains why this is my software pick of the week.
Well, we'll get to that. Don't, it's a huge spoiler right there. No one's going to watch the ending now. What are we going to do? let's talk about Verizon. Apparently Verizon saying that Windows or Microsoft needs to get on the ball because Windows Phone doesn't support WiMAX or LTE or any 4G technology, whatever you want to call it. Why on earth doesn't Windows Phone have the capability to support LTE at this point?
Well, I think they've said it's something that's coming next year for sure.
But why wait? It's like, oh yeah, our tablet OS is coming next year. Our 4G yeah. support is coming next year. What's the draw to just waiting
to next year? When will then be now?
It's the anticipation. Yes. Are they building anticipation where we're like, it's here? It's like
I don't know. I also think Verizon's looking for things to say at this point about why they only have one Windows Phone and they're not really supporting Windows Phone. Just my opinion.
Was it because they can't mess with it? I mean, Verizon gets the chance when it comes to Android devices to load it up with bloatware if they want. And Windows Phone's pretty locked down, I think. Is that one of the reasons why Verizon would just be like, we only have this one? They have one phone. That's really sad.
Actually, I have a question. How come Verizon hasn't given this ultimatum to Apple? Apple also does not support LTE. So is there some kind of a scare tactic coming Cupertino's way as well, or do we only get that here on the Windows side?
That's hysterical. Imagine a carrier trying to push around Apple. I think that happened before, and then Apple decided to push them around.
Well, now, to be fair, actually, it's sort of inexcusable that Windows Phone doesn't support LTE, right? I mean, you know, there's not a big market of for devices that have yesterday's technology today. You know, I think people are looking for that kind of stuff. You know, when they go to buy a new phone, they want, you know, what's the one with all the, you know, the new stuff. And it's hard when you don't sell devices that have that stuff. And I think that's a big problem with the whole Windows Phone strategy, you know, that they're kind of cutting the difference between iPhone and Android. And that sounds good on paper until you realize that Android is always the one that's on the cutting edge. And that's ultimately what a lot of people are looking for.
I can see why.
Do you buy Microsoft's argument that I've heard them make saying, you know, one of the reasons we're not supporting LTE yet is because of battery life?
I buy that, actually.
Do you buy that, Paul, or no?
What do you think, Paul?
I think there are plenty of phones that have LTE that have terrible battery life on the market, and I think they should at least offer it as an option.
So I think the thing is, Windows Phone is a hard sell to a lot of people at this point because it's a lot of people don't know about it at all. But finding out that it has no battery life on certain devices.
For example, no, but, you know, the iPhone is kind of a special case because they don't let you remove the battery. So if they put LTE in there and battery life was halved, people would have, you know, a few options. Obviously, you can buy the big battery packs and the plug-in docks and all that stuff. You know, in Windows Phone and Android, you can buy batteries for $3 a piece on Amazon. So it's not a huge deal. Even if you're a big traveler or whatever, and you want this thing to go all day long, you get an extra battery and you go, if that's the phone that you want. I just think it needs to be an option, you know. One of the ways that you don't compete effectively in the market is to explain that we don't support one of our major partners' technologies because it's bad. You know, it just doesn't work. You know, they need to support it.
Well, maybe they'll support it with T-Mobile, with their HSPA Plus pseudo 4G network. I mean,
so actually they do that. And on AT&T today, my 3G Windows Phone says it's 4G, which it isn't, which I always find very funny. but it does say 4G, and it that's something even Apple won't do, you know. Apple made a big deal at that October event where they said, you know, there are people in the wireless industry fighting over what 4G is and what 4G isn't. We're not going to get involved in that fight. But yeah, you did, because AT&T markets that as 4G. And when you attach to that network with an iPhone, it says 3G. So they very clearly have made a determination that that's not 4G.
And isn't the phone, what's the name of it? The one I like so much that now I can't remember the name, on T-Mobile, the new one. The new Windows phone, radar. That's a 4G phone.
Well,
isn't it?
4G. Like it's HSPA, name, right? Whatever. You know.
Right.
Yeah. It's sort of 4G. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
The HTC. It's not LTE. 4G. I think it's actually somewhere on somebody's desk right now. It's on Colin's desk. We have that in studio somewhere. If only Colin could hear us magically through the power of my voice right here. I don't know.
Anyway, the point is, you know, Apple. Dead. Apple was slow to adopt 3G. You remember the first iPhone only had Edge. Right now, they're slow to adopt LTE. You know, Apple operates in a certain fashion, and they can kind of get away with that stuff. But you know, when you're coming from nowhere like Microsoft is with Windows Phone, I just, it's inexcusable that you wouldn't go out of your way to, you know, have some differentiators, you know, that your competition doesn't. It just doesn't make sense. Yeah, so are you trying to show that this thing says 4G?
I'm just trying to get this thing to work.
Oh, I see. I can show you mine. I don't know. I don't know if you can see it.
This is the. Oh, what are we looking? Oh,
can you see it?
I can blur. I can see it blurrily. 4G. Oh, it's gone. It's gone.
And it's gone. There you go.
But yeah, I don't know if we even get T-Mobile's 4G over here.
Tap the very top of the screen.
Tap the top.
Just, yeah, no, it does. Just tap.
There we go. Yep. I don't know if you can see that. Right up there. That's 4G. That's one more G. That's awesome.
It is one more G.
I love it. It's so, look, oh yeah, it doesn't really
matter. You got to get all the Gs.
It's all about the Gs. Oh, look at that. It just drops down. That's handy. I don't even carry a phone anymore. I've given up. I've got to get back the phone. Ready, it's being confiscated.
It's funny. All these guys who are on the leading edge of technology today, we're going to spend our infirm years out in the woods with no technology at all, just like crying in a fetal position.
No, we'll be building tents and shelters with wood and old technology. We'll be ripping out the gold and pieces out of the thing. Like they
I'll miss the incessant upgrading.
So, you guys, I'm sure everyone's sick and tired of talking about this, but let's talk about it anyway. Carrier IQ. Not on Windows Phone devices, as far as I know.
End of conversation. All right, moving on. Oh, is that a problem elsewhere?
I don't know. It's a problem for everybody. You know, like, because people have this weird expectation of privacy when they don't read the terms of service on their contracts.
Yes, you're right.
I'm just like, you know what? If I'm going to go on a rant here. If you actually received notice about everything to the point where you actually did read it, every term of service, every contract you get would be like 7,000 pages because it would be in 72-point font and no one would read it. That's the problem. Like, I don't know what it would take for people to realize what they're giving up when they sign a contract with Verizon or AT&T or Sprint or even the new Xbox dashboard update. You give up your right to have a class action suit. Now, Sony did the same thing with the PS3 and AT&T got away with it with their contracts. It's like, unless people don't want the device, they're just gonna sign away their rights all the time. Like, I mean, anybody's really upset about Carrier IQ here?
No, in fact, the more I looked into
phone
it,
users.
Yeah, when I sort of examined this, and what I found was, it's not as bad as they're making it sound, you know. And this is such a weird thing to say, but in some ways, the big victim here is almost the company that made this software, right? Because it's not like they put it on the phones or configure it a certain way. It's the wireless carriers who, of course, are the great evil empires of our age. I don't know. You know, it makes sense that Verizon or AT&T or whoever would want to make sure that their network was working correctly and that certain types of data were efficient. You know, it creates a situation where they can make the experience better for users. I'm not really clear on why this is such a huge problem. Of course, the one nice thing about this being a big controversy is now that it's happened, you know, it probably just goes away. You know, like this thing will probably go away, which is too bad for that company, I suppose, since obviously this is what they do. But I think that any concerns about privacy are going to be cleaned up very nicely just by virtue of the fact that, you know, it's become a big controversy. Now that will be the end of that.
Mary Jo, any strong feelings or even weak feelings about Carrier IQ?
I guess, you know, I was reading, I think it was news.com that had a report after this whole blow up, and the guy, and it turned out what the guy was doing wasn't as bad as everyone thought. And it was more of a PR debacle almost than it was like, hey, they're capturing all your keystrokes and they're looking at everything you're doing. It turned out not to be that. But like Paul just said, I think, you know, if it's good in terms of making sure people retain a shred of privacy, even if just an illusion, it's a good thing that those kind of things happen. I was happy to hear right away Microsoft saying it's not on any of the Windows phones. Made me happy to be a Windows phone user.
Yeah, Alex just handed me his phone again. In the settings page, you have this feedback option. I mean, you've seen this on browsers and things. If you want to send back data, you can opt in on this. It's on the cellular data connection, though. I'm kind of curious if it runs on Wi-Fi still, if you don't opt in.
Actually, I would say that is the one big failing of this system.
You can
system
turn off that, feedback.
Yeah.
Look at that.
This system's on by default. It doesn't tell you that it's on, and there's no way to turn it off. If you think about the way that Microsoft does things, you know, they have the customer experience improvement program or whatever. It's not on by default. They will prompt you once. If you want to turn it on, you can say no. It will never prompt you again. You can go in and find it manually and turn it on if you want. And that's the way they do things. And, you know, wireless carriers don't think that way because, you know, they're not necessarily pro-consumer, but, you know, it's shocking. I mean, you know, that these evil people would, you know, behave in an evil fashion. I'm so shocked by that.
I love when you when you go to the privacy statement, it actually defaults into this kind of small screen. See the, you can see the text there. You have to zoom in to see Windows Phone privacy statement. And it's in tiny font. I mean, that's a little, I mean, look how the glorious Windows font is right there. It's nice and large there. But to read this, I guess you could pinch and zoom indefinitely.
Actually, you probably need to get a bigger phone.
That's why phones are getting bigger because of privacy warnings.
Titan.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I don't think people ever read these things. I mean, they even did a South Park about EULAs. I mean, that's how silly
it should be like one of those college term papers that you write where in the middle you just write a note to the audience saying, I don't think you're really reading this. you know, and just to see if anyone ever catches it.
I don't think you're reading this. You have nice hair today. And just keep going. Yeah, I've had those in the middle of essays, but that was not that's how I ended up here, I guess. That's what happened.
It's like the fake credits in the airplane movies, or if you can read this, you don't need glasses and like the Spaceballs credits.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty sure that if there was really a subscriber and consumer outrage about this, there would be like a carrier that actually would say, we are company A, and we pride ourselves on your privacy, and you should join us because of that. Nobody's doing that.
Actually, there are companies doing that. You just don't ever hear about them because nobody cares.
There you go.
It's true. There's a – I don't know the name of them because you kind of read about it and then you forget about it. But there's a company that exists to be like Facebook but with incredible privacy controls.
Oh, is that Unthink?
I don't remember. But
yeah, I saw that too. Nobody's joining it either.
Who cares?
Well, let's get rid of our apathy and care about our sponsor, Newegg. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Newegg.com, the place on the internet to shop for tech. Now you can trade in your used gadgets. Let's say you got a cell phone and you're like, you know what? I don't want anybody tracking me anymore. That's it. I'm getting rid of it. You can trade in your used gadgets and get a Newegg gift card at the Newegg trade-in site powered by Gazelle. If you haven't heard of Newegg, I don't believe you. I think you have. You've had it heard about Newegg because it's a great site. As I call you liar, they are a leading online retailer which prides itself on their shopping experience, rapid delivery, and customer service. They have over 84,000 products, an award-winning website, and they have tons of user reviews. Okay, you're getting real reviews. They have over 1.9 million customer reviews and high-res photo galleries. Now, Newegg has a new trade-in site powered by Gazelle. It's Newegg.com. It's available at Newegg.com/trade. It gives you a fast and easy way to get a Newegg gift card for the value of your used gadgets. So if you have a smartphone, an MP3 player, laptop, digital camera, GPS devices, e-reader, you know, you name it, gadgets in 20 product categories, over 200,000 unique items. Now, how much of a Newegg gift card will you get if you sell your gadgets to them? iPhones are going between $122 and $163. iPod Touch 4th generation, this little thing here, $107. Maybe I want to get rid of this and pick up something else. HTC Sensation 4G is going for $195. The Droid Bionic, $290. And the list continues. You should round up, if you want to use this, round up your used gadgets from your home and your office. Visit Newegg.com/trade to see what your gadgets are worth today. Newegg will give you a gift card for the cash value of your electronics. The sooner you trade, the better the price. Obviously, your technology is not getting any better or newer. Go to Newegg.com/trade to check it out. As Newegg says, take it from a geek. That's Newegg.com/trade, and we thank them for their support of Windows Weekly as well. On to listener question and answer. Now, one of the questions early we got was about Paul and his experience with the Xbox 360 and the dashboard. You're saying it's less than pleasant?
Well, no. Actually, I'm okay with it. What I'm saying is it remains to be seen whether the Kinect stuff is kind of a, you know, like a game changer or a big deal. I actually, just using the interface with a controller as you would normal is fine. I mostly use my Xbox for games. We have an Xbox out in the living room. During the beta, that's the one that actually had the software update, so I didn't use it as much. A lot of the media content, and that's, you know, there's a long story about why it's on that one and not on the other one, but A lot of the media content stuff that's coming is not there yet. It's not here on day one. It's coming late in December. Some of it's coming in early 2012. So, you know, there's more to come, and there's more to talk about. I'm just saying, you know, from a UI perspective, it's not a huge leap over what was available previously. It's still a flat UI with squares. You know, it's kind of similar to what we had before. It's not dramatically different.
What do you think of Netflix on it, Paul? I saw a ton of people on Twitter really dissing
actually,
the new Netflix.
All right, so the UI is dramatically different. It's nothing like a Metro kind of, you know, UI. It's strange. It's got kind of this weird kind of stacked movie title looking thing. It's okay. You know, the one thing I really appreciate, and this is starting to happen across all of the devices that Netflix is supported on, is it finally supports captions. I didn't think we were ever going to see that on the 360. So the Netflix app, which was just updated along with this other stuff, supports captions now on a lot of its content. So does the Apple TV, by the way, which, you know, again, was, to my knowledge, a silent update that you didn't know that was coming. So I don't know if are you just playing a video or is someone actually doing that?
That's a video.
Yeah, so there's no way to see. But if they go in and look at a movie, they're... maybe it appears right here. You see where it says HD there. Sometimes next to that, there'll be a closed captioning symbol, and that will tell you this caption's available. So this weird effect that you're seeing right now is actually very reminiscent of how the new Xbox experience worked when it first came out, which I didn't like, you know. But, to be honest, I've never seen a truly great Netflix UI on any of these devices. They're all a little bit different. All of them have their problems, you know, and this one is, I don't know that I'd say it's any better or worse than anything else. It's certainly different, but it's clearly these guys are searching around for something that makes sense and they haven't found it yet.
Yeah. It's not consistent with the media center version of Netflix. It's not consistent with a lot of versions.
They're all different. You know, there's a weird thing. We use the Apple TV a lot, for example, in Netflix. You go down some big list of Netflix titles and you get down to say number 183 and then you go into it. And you realize that's not what you want. And you go back. It doesn't go back and put you where you were. It goes all the way back to the beginning of the list. So then you find yourself, you know, scrolling through a huge list again. There's a lot of issues like that across the various Netflix clients. I'm just more concerned with the playback stuff. And again, to me, the big deal is they put captioning in there. That's huge for me. And I'm just really glad they did that.
Somebody asked in the chat room, do you have to get the update?
Yep. Well, no, actually... if you don't care about Xbox Live at all, you could ignore it. Otherwise, you have to get it. It's absolutely mandatory. You cannot log on to Xbox Live with your user, you know, your gamer tag, unless you accept the update. It will not let you do it.
So keep those questions coming in the chat room. We also had a question about what Windows Phone apps do you suggest for a new Windows Phone user?
Windows Phone apps.
Yeah, they exist.
No. I mean,
they do exist.
It's 40,000. Well,
I mean, I get asked this a lot, actually, and yeah. Paul, I'm sure does too, but I'm not somebody who downloads a ton of apps. It's not because I'm too cheap to buy the apps. If I find an app I like, I would buy it, but I don't have a lot of apps on my iPad either. I'm not a big app user, I guess. The apps that I don't have on Windows Phone that I would love are we've talked about this before, some of these local apps, like in New York, how on the iPhone you have an app. If you're in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you can use their app to kind of navigate through the museum and know what you're looking at. And there's nothing like that on Windows Phone. So those are the kind of apps I'd really love to see come to the platform that aren't there. I'm not an Angry Birds user. I don't care if that's on the platform. It is. I don't care, you know. So I'm a very atypical
user. Games.
What about the Paul Theroux app?
When we were in D.C., you know, you go to some of the museums down there, and they also will have signs where there's an iPhone app and an Android app, but of course there's no Windows Phone app. So that is kind of tough. I only use, like Mary Jo, same thing. You know, after some initial excitement over apps, you kind of, they kind of trail off, you know. So I use the Facebook app regularly. I use the Amazon Kindle app. I use something called Filter Lab, which is a Instagram-style app. In that it has, you know, filters. On AT&T, I happen to use the My AT&T app a lot because it allows you to monitor your data usage and so forth. I find that to be very useful, especially when traveling. I use that screen capture app, but that's something specific to what I do for a living. I use Spotify for music. I use Twitter. And that's, you know, I mean, a lot of the point behind Windows Phone is these integrated experiences. You know, I don't have a lot going on in the way of picture apps and stuff because, you know, there's an awesome picture hub and you have most of what you need in there. And, you know, the email apps are fantastic. I probably spend more time in email than anything else. AccuWeather is the weather one. What'd you say?
Oh, so same for me. It's like, I feel like I'm in the apps that are integrated into the phone more than anything that I'm downloading.
Yeah, in some ways, it is the success of the design of the OS that you don't really need too many additional apps. I think that's one of the problems with the usage bundle on the iPhone, where it's that kind of whack-a-mole thing where you're in, out, you know, trying to find, you know, you do something, oh, I got to get out, you know. And then there's also that weird thing on the iPhone where you launch a link, let's say, from an email app, and then it launches the browser, but now you want to get back to the email app, you know, and you can do it. But it's not, you know, again, because there's no back button, it's one of those things you have to sort of learn, you know. So I just think the, you know, the inherent nicety of the Windows Phone UI makes a lot of these extraneous apps not necessary.
A Windows 8 question. Does Windows 8 really not truly offer anything special for desktop? Is there anything different about the desktop?
Well, again, so unless something changes. Yes, there are things that are nice about it. I mean, don't get me wrong, but... it's not, you know, there's been a big debate over this new UI, the Metro UI, and it's not something that you can use a lot now because there are no usable apps. So right now for me to say Metro is going to work great with mouse and keyboard, it's a little tough because it's theoretical. I'm not going to go into the Metro UI a lot. I really like the Metro UI version of start menu search, right? Which is like start screen search, but you know, whatever, that's not a reason to buy Windows 8. I do like the new Explorer. I like the new, you know, the task manager. I like some of the new, you know, settings interfaces that they have and all that stuff. But, you know, none of these are major deals. I think this beta, when we finally get access to a store with real apps, is going to be the big differentiator there. You know, it's funny that we've alluded to something on this podcast that has been bugging me in the back of my head. In fact, I wanted to talk to Mary Jo about this at some point on the side. But it's this notion of what is it that you're doing on your computer? Like what are you installing for apps? You know, I don't want to speak for Mary Jo, but I think from talking to her in the past that she doesn't actually use Microsoft Office, for example, which is one of the big applications that I install. It has occurred to me very recently that I might, in fact, be able to get along without Microsoft Office. And how would that change the way that I use a computer? And I think that this way that things are changing is what has enabled the success of the iPad, let's say, or these kind of non-standard window, you know, non-Windows computers. And it's the challenge that Microsoft has moving forward when they have to create this OS that's going to compete with in kind of a different world, you know, where maybe we aren't installing apps the old-fashioned way anymore, you know.
Yeah. I don't really use a lot of Office. That's true. You know, the two apps... People laugh every time I say this, but the app I use the most on my PC is Notepad. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I write in Notepad and then I cut and paste it into WordPress to blog.
I could never do that. So what do you do for spell checking?
Yeah, well, that's why I have a lot of spelling.
You just write really well. No, seriously. I mean, like, why do you, you know, do you rely on the spell checker in the browser at that point?
I rely on the spell check that's in WordPress because we have kind of a customized version of WordPress that we use at ZDNet. And so I always use that spell check in there. But, you know, back to the person's original question, I think I keep thinking there must be some features of Windows 8 that we don't know about that are coming. That may make it more of a compelling release. And a couple that I wonder if they're going to show up in the beta, one of them is integrated Skype, like not so much a Skype app, but like Skype integrated into Windows. And I wonder if that's going to be in there in the beta. And if that would be something people would really, you know, find a compelling reason to move to Windows 8. And another one that I wonder about too, for another segment of the audience would be Kinect, built-in Kinect integration, because we know they're doing the Kinect for Windows SDK, and they're going to be announcing that fairly soon. So what if they build, you know, kind of like the hooks of that into Windows 8, and so that it's just like more automatic that when you have a Kinect device, some kind of a new Kinect device for your PC, that'll just be built in and automatically work. I mean, I'm thinking there've got to be things like that, because otherwise Windows 8 for a desktop PC or a notebook PC user is going to be a minor release other than the UI.
I can see the Kinect hooks being built in, so you can actually, you know, disconnect a Kinect and it'll work. But the Skype integration just makes me like scream, like my head is like antitrust. I can imagine the EU freaking out. Like, you can't build this in unless you build it into Outlook, which is a separate program. I can see them working together, but like if it's pre-installed.
I think that Microsoft has a really good case to make these days that if they don't do this integration stuff, they're not going to be able to compete effectively. And
I mean, look at Defender.
They only have, 85% of the market. What do you mean compete effectively?
No, like Windows Defender, they're going to build antivirus and anti-malware into the operating system.
You can't give competitors an artificial leg up because you have 85% of the market. I mean, I think that there'll be a day in the future where Microsoft will own 90% of the traditional PC market, but the traditional PC market will be 30% of the what I think of as the general purpose computing market. At that point, you could make this argument. Well, they're still dominant over here, but that stuff doesn't matter as much anymore. You know, I the world is changing, and I think people are going to be. I don't want to call it, performing these computing tasks or whatever on devices that today are very non-standard, non-traditional. So they need to meet the needs of this changing market. And one of those needs is, pervasive connectivity, pervasive communications capabilities, pervasive mobility, et cetera, et cetera. So, they need to build that stuff in, I think, in order to compete going forward.
Shall we move on to the picks?
Sure.
So we got a software pick of the week. Paul, what do you got?
Well, so I originally had, I guess I have three really, not these two. I originally had some other stuff that has been put, the release of this, the thing I wanted to recommend was put off a week. So I threw in the stuff we've already discussed, which is the Xbox companion app for Windows Phone. My Xbox Live app for iOS, which is particularly good on the iPad again. And I should also throw out there, the offline version of Windows Defender, which is in beta. But, again, it's one of those tools that I think should be in the toolbox of anybody who does any kind of troubleshooting or whatever. I think most of the people listening to this podcast, even if you're not doing it professionally, have family members or friends where you are spending time at their house. I literally just did this yesterday for my friend Chris, and you're troubleshooting problems on their computers. And, this is one of those things you can bring with you to try to solve problems. And it's a great thing to have. Spend the time to make even a CD. CDs are so cheap. Just have it sitting over there in the corner and, be able to find and fix problems with yours and other people's computers as well. So kind of anticlimactic. We already discussed all of it. Sorry, but.
Well, now you have a good reason to go pick it up. I mean, we've talked about it extensively. See, there you go.
There you go.
And then your other software pick, I think we talked about that too.
We did.
So there you go. Another one?
I threw them together. Random? A random one?
Yeah, just...
No. No, I have to hold on. I have an awesome pick for next week. I was hoping... I actually put it in the notes. I don't know if Mary Jo saw it earlier, but then I took it out. But I have to hold off.
You mean that app where... I just muted myself there. That's a joke. You didn't lose audio there.
Yes, that's exactly it. I can't believe you said that on the air.
I know. Well, next week you're going to go in-depth on it. So now you guys have a teaser. So... Let's go to the enterprise pick of the week. Yes. Mary Jo?
So enterprise pick of the week is Exchange Server 2010 Service Pack 2. And everybody's like, oh, service pack of the week. Yes. But I'll say the reason I made this my pick of the week is there's a few new features in the service pack, some protection and compliance tooling, some new deployment options. But the part I found really interesting was there's this new hybrid configuration wizard, which allows you, if you're a Exchange user, to basically sync up your Exchange running on-prem and your Exchange running Exchange Online. So I think this is interesting because more and more we're seeing Microsoft do this with all their different products. You're seeing them try to help customers bridge the gap between on-prem and in the cloud versions of the same product. And this is why and how they're planning to help people kind of overcome one of the many reasons they're reluctant to go to the cloud, which is it's too hard to bridge the gap. So I think it's really interesting to see they're doing this in Service Pack 2. They're doing more of this with SQL Server. They're doing it across the board with a lot of their enterprise products. And this is, again, their whole way of kind of encouraging people who may be very reticent to go to the cloud to give it a shot.
And before we hit our rumor of the week, let's thank another sponsor, Carbonite Online Backup. Are your files backed up right now? Are they backed up automatically and continually and kept safely off-site away from a computer crash, a nasty virus, a fire, a theft, or even a fly, apparently? Yeah, don't be like me. I had a hard drive die, and it's not backed up, so I'm going to be using this pretty soon. To be really protected, you need online backup from Carbonite. With Carbonite, your files are automatically and continually backed up. You don't have to do anything. It's all passive there. They're stored safely off-site, and if after you have a computer disaster, it's easy to restore them. So you're covered there. Plus, you can access your backed up files privately or on any computer, and this fly is really starting to bug me, on your smartphone or iPad with a free app. You get unlimited backup for your PC or Mac for only $59 a year. Try it for free. Go to Carbonite.com and enter the code Windows. That's Windows. You'll get 2 bonus months free if you decide to buy with our offer code of Windows. Be sure to sign up for the free trial from the homepage to get 2 months for free. And there's no credit card required. It's not one of those, oh, I forgot that my card was in there. Nope, you don't even need to put a credit card in. That's Carbonite.com, and the offer code is Windows. And thanks to that fly for really, really throwing me off today. On to the rumor of the week, which is, drumroll.
It's mine. It's mine. Yeah, so sometimes I do code name pick of the week, and sometimes I do rumor of the week. So this is an interesting rumor that I only have from one source. But it's a very interesting rumor and from a very good source. So the rumor is that this coming Consumer Electronics Show, the one in 2012, may be the last one where Microsoft has a major presence. And by major presence, I mean, you know, Steve Ballmer does the keynote the night before the show kicks off and all. And if you think this through, this makes a lot of sense on a couple of different fronts. One reason is, you know, CES isn't really a huge show typically for Microsoft. I mean, sometimes they show like vision stuff and, you know, hold up a tablet that never materializes or takes a couple of years to materialize. You know, they usually do some Xbox related stuff there, but it's not typically a big Windows or Windows Phone show for the company. In that respect, I think it makes a lot of sense if Microsoft kind of backs away a little bit, you know, continues to have a booth at CES, but doesn't actually make it a big showcase event for them. The other reason I think it makes a lot of sense is, as we've talked about before on Windows Weekly, Microsoft really wants to be Apple more and more. And they're doing a lot of things around secrecy and the big reveal kind of stuff to try to emulate Apple in terms of the way they develop and roll out products. So, you know, Apple doesn't make CES their showcase event. They have their own events where they make their big announcements. And the tipster says, this is the way Microsoft's going too. So it makes a lot of sense that you're not going to see them roll out, you know, a Windows 8 beta at CES. You're going to see them do that in a separate Microsoft dedicated event. So I think it's a very interesting tip, kind of gives you indication of where Microsoft's thinking about doing some of their bigger events. We always thought they'd be, you know, when we were doing predictions, we'd say at CES, that's where they're going to do it because that's a huge show for them. But if the tipster is right, we may start seeing Microsoft do more Apple-like rollouts, you know, as something where the press gets a big invitation a couple days before, you know, show up at this event we're having. So again, very interesting and a real change in how they do their big announcements and big reveals.
That's too bad because they had pretty cushy carpeting. I mean, them and Intel.
I think actually, that's very tiring,
though. You know, I like that. I hope they stop going to CS. I hate CS. But and Apple, of course, dropped out of Macworld, which was also kind of their way of saying, you know, we want to do this thing on our own schedule. I will have lived if I can witness Stephen Sinofsky saying that they didn't delay the Windows 8 beta. They made it in February so they could have it at their own event. I hope that's exactly how they frame that. That would be beautiful.
Well, I had been hearing even before this whole February beta thing, I had heard Microsoft was not going to announce the beta at CES. Like I kept getting tips saying, nope, they're not going to do it. You guys all think we're going to do that. We're not, you know, don't get your hopes up. That's not where we're going to do it. So right. I didn't know exactly when, but I knew it was sometime after CES based on various things I had been hearing for the record. Yeah.
I think that brings a close to yet another episode of Windows Weekly. Let's promote stuff, shall we? Paul, would you like to promote any site, Maybe some a Wynn super site.
They're going to say, let's have a moment of silence.
For what, they're leaving CES?
do I want to promote stuff? Yes. Well, I do have the super site for Windows, of course. I think that would be where I would point people. That seems to be where most of my stuff is these days.
What if they want to find you on Twitter?
Or the social media? My last name, at Thurrott, Thurrott.
On the new Twitter, actually. They just redesigned it today.
You know, they did, but why am I not seeing a change?
It's rolling out slowly, but the apps themselves have been updated. I don't know if the Windows Phone one, but if you go to m.twitter.com, it'll be there. But that's a whole other show. So we'll be talking about
that. I still see the old version.
So you'll join the cool kids by next week. Don't worry, Paul. Mary Jo, would you like to promote anything? Where can people find you around the web?
Yes. My website's allaboutmicrosoft.com on ZDNet. And on Twitter, I'm at Mary Jo Foley. And I also am not seeing the new Twitter, Paul. So it's not just you.
They hate the East Coast.
That's it. I wanted to bring up one quick thing that we didn't mention in the show that we might have. Next week on December 14th, there's a big T-Mobile and Nokia announcement happening.
That's right.
Which increasingly looks like it's going to be the Nokia 710 coming to T-Mobile, although we don't know exactly when.
That invitation looked like a bunch of Windows tiles, pink and white. I mean, it could be anything.
Pink and white, that sounds like a 710 to me.
It could be anything. I mean, maybe, who knows? It could be a new Nokia tablet. No, I'm just kidding. It's probably a Windows phone. It's going to be the Lumia.
Not happening at CES.
Look at that.
Right. Although maybe we'll see more Nokia announcements at CES around some of the other carriers, hopefully, crossing fingers.
So that's next week. And next week, Leo Laporte should be sitting, in a different chair, but right here. He'll be back next week. So thanks, everybody. Thanks, Paul, Mary Jo, and we'll see everybody next week.
Thank you, sir. Thanks. Thank you for coming.
I'm not a professional. Hey, look, it's me. I could get used to this. It's a good-looking guy. All right.